called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. It'll be the easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me?
You really do?
Anybody on your watch?
Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet. A prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the section. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
We're back, y'all, with part two of one of my favorite podcasts of each year, the Mark Draft. Mark Hicks joining your boy Jay Hicks on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. The preseason podcast of the year is how we affectionately call it. So yeah, y'all heard part one of the Mark Draft, and we left off talking about quarterbacks. I mean, we got through, we didn't even get through the whole top 10. I think we got through maybe six picks before we broke off into the quarterback discussion, and then there was no chance of us containing it in one podcast. So here we are, part two of the podcast. So we were leaving off, when we left off, we talked about Mitch Trubisky, the Cleveland native who is a North Carolina Tar Heel. So let me tell you what I do like about Mitch. I think of the four quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Kaiser, Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes, and Mitchell Trubisky, Mitch is the one guy to me whose talent jumps most off the screen. Now, that's just, you know, my opinion, but like when I watch the highlights, when I watch, and then everybody looks good on the highlight tape, I get that. But, you know, some guys you can just see it and some guys you don't. The guy that I see it the most in is Trubisky. And he's been linked to the 49ers at two. He's been linked to the Cleveland Browns at number one overall. Just recapping the top six real quick, though, so to bring everybody up to speed that may not have heard the first part of this. You said, Mark, if you were running the Browns, you would take Myles Garrett. Number one, although cross your fingers, you would take him, but not with a lot of confidence. You said that if you ran the 49ers, you would trade down, look to trade down, but if not that, you would take Solomon Thomas, the defensive lineman out of Stanford. At three, if you ran the Bears, you would take Ohio State safety Malik Hooker. If you ran the Jags at four, you would take Leonard Fournette, the running back from LSU. At five, if you ran the Tennessee Titans, you would take Ohio State corner Marshawn Lattimore. And at six, if you ran the New York Jets, you would look to trade down, potentially trading with the Browns, who have the 12th pick. But either the Browns or the Jets, whomever has that pick, whoever picks sixth, it should be Deshaun Watson. That's where we kind of left things off. Again, though, I think Trubisky, he kind of has more talent that jumps off the screen to me than Watson, even though he doesn't have the results. But what you don't like about Trubisky, and which is totally understandable, is that he only played in 13 college games. He only had 13 starts in college. You want to talk about adversity? You want to talk about turning a franchise around? That guy, he barely knows how to take a snap. I mean, he's just wet behind the ears still, you know? So
exactly.
So do this for me, if you would. Please, regardless of fit, please rank these four quarterbacks.
Okay.
If you're just picking on pure talent and who you think is going to project to be the best pro, rank them one through four.
Okay. For me, it would be Deshaun Kaiser, Deshaun Watson, Mitch Trubisky, and Pat Mahomes.
Okay. And again, for those of you who didn't hear the first part, Kaiser is a guy, like you said, who just looks the part. You think he kind of got screwed at Notre Dame. He got screwed out of playing time. He got screwed out of some of his weapons. He got screwed over by his coaches. So you just believe that he has the most talent, though, of the four guys.
I really and truly and honestly believe that of the four, if you take everything, put everything into account, I think, and most importantly, upside, I think DeShone Kizer, in my opinion, has the most upside. I think Watson, you pretty much know who he is, and he'll get better from it if he gets better from a decision making standpoint. But I mean, I think he has that it factor, the tangibles wrapped up. He has an adequate amount of talent per se to make him a successful quarterback. Trubisky is the wild card because, like I said, he's only played in 13 games, and that's what scares me about him. And if I just went strictly on talent, I think Mahomes has a lot more talent than Trubisky. But the thing
he's got the arm talent for sure, like just the flick of the wrist and the ball goes 60 yards. He's got that.
My God, man! I saw some stuff on him where he was on his knees and he threw 65 yards over a fence, man. It was like it's ridiculous the arm strength that he has. But the problem is it's undisciplined because he thinks he can make every throw, regardless of what the situation is. And I saw him throw
Jay Cutler disease.
A pass like a shortstop once to throw to a receiver. Like, you can't do that stuff. It's completely undisciplined.
You know,
and he would have to refine his game to a certain degree in order to be. I mean, just like Brett Favre had to. He could. I mean, he still was a gunslinger, but he had to be controlled and managed. And I think if he gets with a good offensive coordinator or offensive minded coach, I think he can do that. Because he has just as much talent as anybody in this draft. He just needs refinement, and he needs to be calm. If they can calm him down, I think he has a chance to be a very good one. He really intrigues me. But I would be scared to death to take him at 12. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I look at it like this, Justin. At the end of the day, the bottom line is this. The Browns did all of this maneuvering and put themselves in a position to not only clean up in this draft from a defensive standpoint, but get their guy a quarterback because they have all the assets to do that. Now, whether they take this quarterback at one, whether they trade up to two to San Francisco or four or five or six or whatever, they need to come out of here in their first three picks, at least with two defensive talents and their quarterback, whoever their quarterback is. That's
the goal.
Period. Yeah, anything other than that, it's an absolute failure.
Two defensive starters and your quarterback of the future.
Without question.
Let me ask you this.
They have to have that.
Let me ask you this. So those four guys, you gave me your rankings of them. Where would you rank Carson Wentz in with those four guys? Because that's the guy that they passed on last year to give them this opportunity to get the defensive guy and their quarterback. So if you had to weave in Carson Wentz amongst those four, where would he land for you?
He would be third. I personally would, because based on 2015 DeShone Kizer and 2015 DeShone Watson, those two guys would have came out last year. Carson Wentz would have been third out of those three quarterbacks. I think he ranked higher than Trubisky mainly because of how many starts that he's had. I like Carson Wentz, too. I liked him. You know how much I liked him when he came out. But I think all things considered, he will be third. If I was to put him in this list, in this group of quarterbacks, he will be third on my list. Because the DeShones in 2015, both were outstanding quarterbacks, were better than he was. And Trubisky was not. And Mahomes, like we talked about, the offense that he's in, the type of game that he plays at quarterback, he would still be last out of those quarterbacks. But he would be, in my opinion, Carson Wentz would be third out of all of those guys.
Let's move on to the seventh pick of the draft. We're going to come back to quarterback because you can never not talk about quarterback. And
I know that's right.
And my thing is the quarterbacks. I think some the people out there that think that the Browns need to just wait around to number 12 and get their guy, like their guy is going to fall to them at 12. I don't think that's going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
I think that two of those guys if not three of those guys, will be gone before the Browns pick at 12. Because quarterbacks, we see this every year, Mark, they always rise up to the top of the draft. They always do. Whether they deserve it, whether they're of that talent, is debatable, but they always rise up. And there are about, let me just kind of eyeballing it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... 6, there's about 6 teams in the top 10 that you could argue, maybe even 7 that could take a quarterback in the top 10. And even you could even throw in the Saints at 11 could theoretically look at their quarterback of the future. But let's move on to the 7th pick. That would be the San Diego Los Angeles Chargers, who are going to be playing in a minor league soccer stadium next year for a dude named Anthony Lynn that you probably never heard of.
Right.
The good thing about this team, though, is that Phillip Rivers, even though he didn't have a great season last year, he keeps them competitive. I've always been a Phil Rivers guy. I've always liked him. He keeps them competitive. They drafted Joey Bosa last year. He was Defensive Rookie of the Year. And Melvin Gordon came to life last year after a disappointing rookie season. He had a fantastic sophomore season. And
imagine
that. Yeah, he had a breakout year. I don't think anybody saw that coming. It kind of makes you wonder. You know, I mean, most people have them going safety at number 7 if there's one available. I don't know why they wouldn't consider either, you know, trading Phillip Rivers and just getting their quarterback of the future. Like, I mean, it seems like a reasonable thing. I don't think it's going to happen, but new team, well, not new team really, but new city, right? I mean, they're moving up the street, but nonetheless, they're trying to get a fresh start. They're going to have a new stadium in a couple of years. Phil Rivers, I believe, is 35 or 36 years old. He's already seeming like he's declining. You're already last in your division. You might as well just – I would trade Rivers and maybe see if you can get another defensive player and then take your quarterback of the future. I mean, I would consider that at least. But if you ran L.A., what would you do? Yeah.
As much as I love Phillip Rivers, I was actually thinking the exact same thing because – like Drew Brees, like all these guys, you know, they're long in the tooth, and they really need to start looking at their replacement. I mean, because like I said earlier in the first part of this podcast, you know, when you lose it as a quarterback, when you lose it and you are washed up as a quarterback, it goes very, very quickly. I mean, there's no gradual decline. It's you either have it one day and then it's gone the next, and you need to be prepared for that. I mean, or even in the case of somebody gets hurt. I mean, you think about it. I mean, Phillip Rivers gets hurt, Drew Brees gets hurt. I mean, what? You really don't have anything behind him. And my thing is, you need to really start doing, if nothing else, like the Patriots did, in drafting a young quarterback and develop him for a couple of years while this guy is still viable. And then if he turns out to be a good quarterback, you can do what the Patriots could do, either by trading that person for assets to have that, you know, that forward thinking as a franchise. You can't just rely on these guys forever.
Yeah, I mean, and I was going to say real quick, like, to me, even if you like Phillip Rivers, why not take your quarterback of the future now and let him sit for a couple of years under Rivers and develop? Let him sit there for a few years. Let him learn the ropes. And then by the time you're ready to transition away from Phillip Rivers, your new stadium is going to be ready. You move in and boom, you got your guy. And then, you know, or better yet, if you're one of those teams like the Houston Texans that missed out on Tony Romo, why aren't you inquiring about Phillip Rivers?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't understand that. Like, why don't you just – now, Rivers is in a tough spot. He doesn't seem to want to go anywhere. He didn't want to leave San Diego. And I don't blame him. He's got like 9 kids or whatever, but still. You know, that's a lot to pack up and move, but you know what I'm saying? Why not just consider Rivers if you're one of those other teams that are still in need of a quarterback, and then just give them all the assets they want and then let them go forward and take their quarterback of the future. But having said all that, if you ran the Chargers, what would you do there? It doesn't sound like you would take the quarterback though.
Right. In this situation they won't. If I would seriously consider trying to move Phillip Rivers for all the things that you mentioned. But being stuck at 7, if I'm taking somebody, I'm taking whichever is left of the three defensive back triangle that we talked about earlier, and that's Marshawn Lattimore, that's Malik Hooker, and Jamal Adams. In this case, Jamal Adams falls. So Jamal Adams is the last guy standing. They have a new defensive coordinator in former Jacksonville Jaguar coach Gus Bradley. So they need to go back to his defensive roots. So he runs a single high safety scheme, which he used in Seattle. So in order to do that, you're going to need a safety, right? So in this case, why not Jamal Adams? You put Jamal Adams back there as his playmaker as a safety and running in that Gus Bradley scheme with Joey Bosa, Melvin Leggett, and all these other Corey Leggett and all these other guys that's on this team. I mean, you're going to make some offensive coordinators sleepless. You're going to make some quarterbacks edgy. You need a quarterback of the defense, and that's one of the things that they were lacking. So you put them there with all the rest of that defensive talent. There you have it.
Yeah, between Leggett and Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, and you add Jamal Adams to that, that's not a bad nucleus for defense, I would have to say. The eighth pick belongs to the wildly disappointing Carolina Panthers.
I actually predicted them to be distinct this past season.
Well, Cam Newton, let me tell you something. Cam Newton fell so hard from grace last year that not only did he just fall off as a quarterback, but black people don't even mess with him anymore. Like, that's how hard he fell. I wrote a column about Cam Newton being the quarterback that black America had been waiting on. And not weeks after that was posted, he does an interview with GQ, I think, and says some stuff that rubs some black folks the wrong way. And, you know, you can't please black Twitter, y'all. I'm just saying. Like, they're a tough cookie. It's hard to get people it's hard to not get black Twitter to hate on you sometimes. But Cam, you know, had some stuff to say. People didn't agree with it. Y'all can read up about it. But, you know, it seemed like the beginning of the end for that team, and they just had a really disappointing year. But they still have a lot of talent. Provided that he's healthy, Luke Kuechly is still probably one of the two or three best defensive players in the entire league.
Without question.
They lost Josh Norman last year, and it seemed to hurt him. I'm curious of whether or not this could be a potential destination for Richard Sherman if they're considering making that move. I don't know if Carolina would do it. I don't know what their cap situation looks like, but I mean, I know that Sherman's been in some trade rumors. I mean, they have a void there as a top corner having to go up against Julio Jones twice a year. Josh Norman's not there anymore. Seems to make a little bit of sense to me, but they've been linked to running backs like Fournette. I've seen Christian McCaffrey going this high at 8 to the Panthers. You know, they lost some receiving talent with a little bit they had. They lost Ted Ginn. They lost Philly Brown. What would you do if you ran the Panthers?
Now, I thought about this a lot. Because they're a difficult team to try to figure out on what I would want. My thing is that I agree with you. I would actually, and as much as I'm not a huge fan of Richard Sherman, and you've known this for a while, the thing about it, getting him would make sense. So I would actually try to explore that situation. But as far as the eighth pick in the draft, it comes down to two players for me, and it comes down for what you like. Christian McCaffrey as a running back, because I have Jonathan Stewart at 30, but he's an old 30. He has a lot of tread on his tires. He's basically worn out. And I think he was at his best when he had a two-back system. And I think Christian McCaffrey, while he's thinly framed, he's not really actually a big guy. He doesn't really fit to a certain degree the Carolina mold of football players. Physically, he's a dynamic football player, and I think he will open up that offense tremendously. So he's a real hard possibility. I was actually thinking about him at 8, but then I really thought about it. Like, you know, for me, when you think of the Carolina Panthers, what do you think of?
I think of Cam Newton. I think of Cam Newton, and I think of power running, smash mouth type football.
Exactly. All right. But also for me, I think of their defense. I think of Luke Kuechly, like you talked about, and their defense and them dominating football games. And you think about it, as badly as Cam played last year, their defense also took a step back. And I think it partially had to do with Josh Norman. But I think also to the fact that their defense did not put enough pressure on the quarterback, did not make those type of plays that was necessary. So I think for this particular case, and them being up there at eight, they need defensive help. Even more so than McCaffrey. And I love Christian McCaffrey. Don't get me wrong. But I think in this particular case, I'm looking at their situation. I'm taking Derek Barnett, defensive end from Tennessee. And I'm going to put him on that edge because they just got Julius Peppers also back, mind you. But he's long in the tooth as well. You know, they're not getting younger on defense. They need some more youth on defense because once Thomas Davis and Julius Peppers and all these other old guys start walking away, it's going to be Luke Kuechly by himself. He's going to need some help down there.
Yeah.
And he's going to need guys to help him, you know, and with an attitude that's going to put pressure on these quarterbacks. And I think Derek Barnett will be the pick for them.
That seems like a solid pick, and you make a lot of great points. I mean, imagine the type of shot in the arm it would be if they did somehow trade for Sherman and picked up Derek Barnett. I don't know if they could acquire Sherman without giving up their first rounder. Maybe if they traded like a second rounder and a fourth for Sherman and then drafted Derek Barnett with their first, like, they'd be right back like they left something.
That's what I was thinking about too, by the way.
Yeah, they'd be back like they left something. So I could see something like that happening. But it's an interesting team there, Carolina. But the ninth pick, the Cincinnati Bengals, missed the playoffs last year, and they're kind of trending in the wrong direction. We talked a lot about Christian McCaffrey. I think he's supremely talented as well. And I think, you know, the more I look at McCaffrey, you kind of figure that he's gonna be a productive NFL player. But when I look at Cincinnati's running game situation, Giovanni Bernard didn't quite turn into the player I think a lot of us thought he was going to be. And Jeremy Hill sucks. So maybe they're going to look running back if they finally have a come-to-Jesus moment and realize that Jeremy Hill is terrible. Right. I don't know that they're going to do that, though. The player that I've seen them link most to is Reuben Foster, but his draft stock seems to be sliding. So if you ran the Bengals, what would you be looking to do?
Well, for me, if this ends up happening, if I actually am the Bengals, I have a chance. You know, it's one thing to draft this guy with the first overall pick, but it's another thing to get this guy at the ninth pick. If Jonathan Allen's on the board, I'm taking Jonathan Allen. And yeah, he's known as an interior defensive lineman. But one thing I've noticed, and you've probably seen this too with Alabama, is that with Jonathan Allen, they rotated him around a lot. They didn't just keep him specifically in the middle to go up against guard. They had him on the edge at times against the tackles. They moved him around. They put him on stunts and things like that. Like I said, Jonathan Allen is a defensive lineman. He's not necessarily what I like to call just to classify him as a defensive tackle or a defensive end. He's a defensive lineman. That means pretty much anywhere I put him, he's going to make plays for me. And if I'm the Bengals, and I don't care who else I have, I don't, you know, you talk about the problem with the Bengals and their issues is they took a huge step back offensively, but defensively they were horrendous to a certain degree last year, and that's part of the reason why they ended up being ninth in this draft because their defense did not step up last year.
When AJ Green got hurt too,
what's that?
AJ Green got hurt.
Well, that's without question. I mean, and you think about that, they also lost all of their depth at wide receiver, so I think they're going to have to build that up as well. I just don't think that they have the fortitude to take a wide receiver at nine. Because you're absolutely right. When AJ Green got hurt, they just completely fell apart on offense. But, you know, their defense also was not up to snuff last year. So Jonathan Allen will be my pick at nine for them. And in my opinion, they would get the steal of the draft if they were to do that. Whoever, in my opinion, gets Jonathan Allen will get the steal of the draft. And like I said, he would have been picked much higher if it wasn't concerned of his shoulders. But I think at nine, it's less of a risk than it would be at one or two or three in the top three picks of the draft.
Of course, a team in the AFC North would get the steal of the draft and it not be the Browns. The Browns have two picks in the top 12. They don't get the steal of the draft. It's the Cincinnati Bengals that get the steal of the draft. It's classic. The Buffalo Bills picked 10th.
Yep.
They cleared house. They got rid of all the Ryans finally. And I think that was maybe, I think Rex's last year was it last year or the year before? I don't know.
Last year.
They got rid of all those guys. And Sean McDermott, the Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator, whom we didn't talk about when we talked about the Panthers. He's gone though. He's in Buffalo running the show.
That's true.
I don't know really what way the Bills are headed. They are a team that has talent, but I can't get a good read on them. Like just every year, I think they're gonna break through and make the playoffs, and then they don't. But they have a pretty decent team. LeSean McCoy was surprising people. He had a great year this past year, but I don't know how much tread he's got left on the tires. They spent big money on Micah Hyde and picked him up from Green Bay, which I thought was a great pickup. But then they lost Stephon Gilmore and to the Patriots, and then they turn around and they might lose Mike Gillisley to the Patriots also, which. Two of their better players, as far as I'm concerned, and they're just going to let them go to the Super Bowl champions,
who are their division rivals.
Like I don't know what they're doing up there, but they lost Zach Brown also on defense. So Buffalo could go a lot of different ways. They brought back Tyrod Taylor, T-Mobile to be their quarterback, but what would you do if you ran the Bills? Like I said, there's a lot of different directions you could go.
There's a ton of directions I could go. I definitely could go defensively. But the defensive players in this draft is so deep that, I mean, I would actually consider just for the Bills in this case, having them sit out the first round as far as going this defensive. One of the issues that I have with them is that, and I don't necessarily think, you know, Tyrod Taylor is nothing that, you know, to write home about, but I think he's an adequate quarterback. I think part of his problem also, and he had, like you said, Shady had an outstanding season last year. That could be his last hurrah before his production just completely falls off. You know, who knows? But at this particular point, his biggest problem was, you know, Sammy Watkins, for the most part, has not lived up to what they did to get him. And a good part of that is due to injury, but it's also due to the fact that, you know, offensively, I mean, they have been so stagnant on offense and so pedestrian. And I think they need to break that offense open. I think what would help them out a lot is to have a complimentary receiver that can play opposite of Sammy Watkins, because Sammy Watkins, while he's somewhat of a burner, but he's a big physical type of guy too. They need actually speed at the wide receiver position, in my opinion, but also in size as well. So they can go one or two routes. They can go Corey Davis, the wide receiver from Western, I believe it's Western Michigan,
mm-hmm.
or they can go with, and this is why I have them picking, is John Ross, the wide receiver from
really.
Washington. Yeah.
You would take John Ross if you ran the Bills at the 10th pick.
I would take John Ross. Oh, and the reason why is because they need a dynamic playmaker. And right, I mean, with Sammy Watkins, all it was just doubling, and when Sammy Watkins did play, they doubled the hell out of him, and he really couldn't he had a hard time getting open, because he's attracted so much attention, and the other wide receivers did not step up enough to be somewhat of a threat to get Watkins open and to keep the defense honest. John Ross, for whatever, I mean, who recently broke Chris Johnson's record at the combine for the 40, would be the perfect complement to him. Because now you're going to have to, I mean, you can't just put one guy on John Ross. Because not only is he just a fast guy that's playing receiver, he's actually a receiver. He actually can catch the football. And you're going to have to pay attention to this guy. So from a defensive backfield standpoint, you're going to have to double him. You're not going to be able to just play him with one guy. And if you're not going to be able just to play off of him, you're not going to be able to bump and run him, because this guy's going to blow right past you and he's going to be wide open.
So he's not so he's a more dynamic playmaker than he's a more dynamic playmaker than Mike Williams from Clemson, though. Why not get two Tigers together at the receiving core?
The only question I have with Mike Williams is his speed, because he's built. He's a taller version of Sammy Watkins in this sense, because he's a physical guy. I think I want them to stretch the field more. And with Ross, he's able to stretch the field. And also, if you're taking two guys with you as a wide receiver, like in this case, like John Ross would, then you could get a tight end or Shady or somebody undercut come across the middle on like a drag route. That defensive backfield is wide open, because even at his age, Shady is no linebacker is going to be able to cover Shady McCoy. And if you put all, if you have your safety's attention on both one safety that's have the attention of John Ross and the other safety that has attention of Sammy Watkins, that leaves that middle wide open for the underneath guys to have a field day. So it brings more attention to the other areas of your offense. So even if John Ross never got the ball, he's still making plays because he is causing the other defensive backs to pay attention to him and not pay attention to the area of the field that's probably going to be most exposed, which is going to be the middle of that field, right behind the linebackers.
Well, that's
where the safety should be.
Yeah, that's a surprising pick. That's a surprising pick. I mean, I would not have projected you to have John Ross going there. I would not have thought that you would have made that pick, but I mean, you've been right before. I mean, and John Ross is definitely a burner. I mean, we know that. And they've had some fast guys up there. I think Sammy Watkins is pretty fast. They had Marquise Goodwin, yep, the track star up there in Buffalo. So they've had some speed up there before. But I mean,
but they're not really any good, though. You know what I mean? They were okay. They were okay guys. They were fast guys. They were okay. I mean, John Ross is an actual wide receiver who just happens to be very, very fast.
Well, they lost Robert Woods, too, at receiver. So there's a hole there. Mm-hmm. Well,
I know he's gone from there. You're right.
Well, speaking of fast football players, Brandon Cooks no longer plays for the Saints. He is in New England now because the rich tend to get richer. And the Patriots, despite the fact that we're doing a lot of talk about the teams at the top of the draft, all of this feels like a little like an exercise in futility, because the Patriots seem to be like a mortal lock to win it again next year, given the offseason moves that they made. But I will say that you know how that goes, that when a team looks like a lock, they tend to not be that. So I'll probably have to pick a new team to win the Super Bowl this year, because everybody's going to be on the Patriots. But Brandon Cooks is there, which means he's no longer in New Orleans, and the Saints pick 11th. They did bring in Ted Ginn to replace Cooks, probably at a cheaper rate, and they also brought in Manti Te'o, if y'all remember that name, blast from the past a few years ago. Amazingly, Jarius Byrd, Paul Kruger, Jari Evans, those were all Saints that were all not re-signed, at least last I checked, by New Orleans, and they're just out there. Those guys were major pieces, or supposed to be major pieces to this football team, and now they're just floating out there in free agent purgatory. And of course, you have Drew Brees, who's now 38 years old, probably the most slept-on all-time great quarterback that we've seen. I mean, maybe it's because he plays a lot of his games in a dome, but Drew Brees statistically is right there with Brady and Peyton Manning and Brett Favre historically, and Dan Marino. He's like literally right there with all those guys in yards and completions and touchdowns and all that stuff. But he's 38 years old. It doesn't appear that he and Sean Payton have a lot of time left. So if you're running the Saints, what's your move?
Well, my move is to help, you know, to help with their defense first at the 11th pick. So the guy that I would like for them at that particular point will be Taco Charlton, the defensive end from Michigan. Pairing him with Sheldon Rankins and Nick Fairley, who they happen to have there, will help make that Saints defensive line very formidable, and that will help them out a lot. I will almost guarantee you that at some point, the Saints will also try to make a move to try to get themselves another a quarterback in there. If never nothing else, but as a backup slash developer. I think they brought Chase Daniel over there back to
brought him back
to the Saints. So he helps fill that gap. But I think they're also going to, they at some point, are going to take a young quarterback as well. You also could possibly see these guys trade down if they don't see anybody that they really, really want. But I think if they stay there, I think they need help on the defensive line, you know, with the names that you mentioned and all the gaps that they lost on defense. They also picked up Alex Okafor, too. So that helps them from a linebacker standpoint, because I was afraid about them as from a linebacker as well. But I think Alex Okafor will help fill that position. But their defensive line is really shredded now with Kruger and other guys that you have mentioned, you know, being gone. So Taco Charlton be my pick for the Saints in 11.
I think that would be a good pick. I think he's a good football player. I think he's solid. I think it would surprise a lot of people that he would go ahead of Jabril Peppers in the draft, given all the hype that Jabril Peppers got last season.
Definitely a lot of it. Too, though.
What'd you say?
I'm not a big Jabril Peppers fan.
Well, me neither. And I was just going to say, I think he's a fine athlete, but I don't see – I don't know why you would waste a pick on a guy who played a position part-time in college. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm picking,
where would you play him? That's the thing.
I don't know where you'd play him. I don't know. I don't know where you'd play him. I mean, you could play him at safety. You could, maybe he's a smallish, smaller linebacker. I mean, to me, he's either a corner or a safety. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I think he's a fine athlete. But again, he only played like a certain percentage of the snaps at safety. Like, he wasn't at safety full time. They moved him all over the place. So if I have the choice between taking a guy that plays safety all the time versus a guy who played safety sometimes to play safety, I'm going to pick the guy who was there all the time. I'm not going to pick Jabril Peppers, but Taco Charlton, he's a good player. And you know, maybe, like I said, it doesn't look like the Saints are ready to get their quarterback of the future just yet. You know, I thought you were going to shock me and maybe say they go Mahomes or something like that.
Let him play in the dome. I would not be shocked if they did that, though, to be honest. I tried to play a PC because I knew of what they needed. I think they need defensive help more than Pat Mahomes, but I would not be shocked at all if they went Pat Mahomes. I honestly would not be shocked at all. And actually, for all intents and purposes, it would make sense. Plus, I think that would give Sean Payton a shot in the arm, too, as well. You know, as far as, you know, okay, now I have a contingency plan once Drew Brees leaves, and then, you know, I don't have to leave here if I don't want to, because now I got a young quarterback that I could groom and build around here now for the next 10 to 15 years. I mean, I would not be shocked if that happened.
You know who Pat Mahomes reminds me of, though, when I look at his numbers and, you know, those 5,000 yards passing, 41 touchdowns, 10 picks. He had a 700-yard passing game this year. I think he had 4 or 5 games where he passed for over 500 yards. He reminded me of somebody. This guy came out relatively recently. This guy that I'm speaking of completed 71% of his throws his senior year for 4,200 yards, 8.1 yards of completion. He had 42 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. Do you know who I'm thinking of?
I'm really drawing a blank.
Geno Smith. That's who Pat Mahomes' numbers remind me of. They remind me of They remind me of Geno's numbers, man. And I'm like, we saw how that played out for the Jets. So
yeah,
I don't know if you can trust Pat Mahomes' college statistics, but anyway, but again, Taco Charlton, good pick though for the Saints, and that brings us to the 12th pick in the draft. And in this particular mock draft, you mentioned earlier that the Browns could be trading up to number 6, and that you would trade up to number 6 and take Deshaun Watson, correct?
Correct. If I had to take one of those quarterbacks at 6, if I had to trade up to 6 to get that quarterback, that's the quarterback I'll be trading up for. And like I say, even if they don't, I think New York is better served to draft Deshaun Watson. And the main reason why, think about it: who's their backup? Who's a quarterback that's there right now
in New York?
For the Jets. Yes.
Oh gosh, do they still have Fitzpatrick?
I don't think Fitzpatrick is there.
Then they got.
What did they pick up?
Don't they got old boy from? The Jets got rid of Geno. He went to New York. I forgot, who do they have now?
they have our good friend Josh McCown.
Oh yeah, of course, Josh McCown. How can
so
I forget?
To me, everything is set up for the Jets to take a young quarterback because they have, in my opinion, probably one of the best "quote unquote" backup quarterbacks that you could possibly have that can hold the ship until this other quarterback is ready. Josh McCown is not going to win you games, but he's going to keep the ship steady until whoever they draft at quarterback is going to be ready.
Josh McCown is going to steer that ship into an iceberg.
Right. I don't think any of those quarterbacks are on the roster right now. So picking up Josh McCown, they did that specifically, in my opinion, to set up for them drafting themselves a quarterback. Which is why I think they should draft Watson. Let's just say even if the Browns don't trade up, I think the Jets should get him, which leads us now to 12. If they stay at 12, let's just say that they don't trade up and they stay at 12.
Okay.
Like I told you before, they need to come out of this draft in their first three picks, wherever these first three picks are, with two defensive talents and their quarterback of the future. They need to figure out who that quarterback is. Like I said, for me, getting a defensive player here at 12 and then finding a way to come back and getting Deshaun Kizer, to me, that would make my draft. That would make my draft for me personally. So going by that philosophy, if they're stuck at 12, one of the biggest things that for me, to order to have the makings of an elite defense, you need talent, but you also need attitude.
Yes.
In my opinion, who is the best person in this draft that brings a complete attitude to a defense?
For my money, it's my guy, man, Reuben Foster.
And that's my man, Reuben Foster.
Yes.
That's the guy who I would take if I was at Browns at 12.
He's pure asshole, and I love it. He's exactly what the Browns need at 12. I think that...
Exactly.
I think Reuben Foster, first of all, he plays with attitude. All he wants to do is hit people. You talk about guys who love football. Reuben Foster loves football. Because he wants to hit everybody. He wants to knock somebody's head off, clean off its shoulders. And that's exactly what the Browns need. I told you this in our text message with the fam. The Browns defense has led the league in niceness since 1999. And I can't stand it. I can't stand it. Like, I just cannot deal anymore with these nice defensive players, these nice football players. Like, Reuben Foster, all the stuff that people don't like about him, the fact that he got into that situation at the hospital, at the combine, with the hospital employees, that he just came back with he had some cloudy piss or something like that. You know what I'm saying? All that stuff is lovely, if you ask me. I mean, as long as he's not out breaking any laws.
The more the merrier, right?
As long as he's not out here breaking the laws or committing crimes, I think it's fantastic because all he wants to do is play. He wants to be great. And to me, if you take Myles Garrett at one and you pair him with Reuben Foster, between Reuben Foster and Greg Williams, Myles Garrett will not be able to slack.
He can't take plays off.
No, he's not going to be able to slack.
He's going to get the most out of his ability.
I'm not going to be excited.
That's part of the reason why I selected Myles Garrett, because of Greg Williams. I'm more confident with the fact that Greg Williams is our DC rather than if it was Ray Horton, who was our two-time defensive coordinator, or Mike Pettine, or any of these
Cold.
Other stiffs that we had a defensive coordinator. I'm more confident in the fact that we have Greg Williams, who's pretty much an a-hole just like the rest of these guys. You know, I mean, Reuben Foster has the mindset and the talent to play in a Greg Robinson defense.
Greg Williams.
And that's what you need. You need attitude, man. Think about it. Think about it like this. Think of the division that we play in. Think of all of the linebackers that's played on the other teams in our division.
Oh, yeah.
For example, Baltimore, Ray Lewis, T. Sizzle. You know what I'm saying? Then you go to Pittsburgh, James Harrison, who's like knocked out our quarterbacks on consistent basis, on in consistent years. He's knocked them out of games, disrespected us. You know, you can go back to all the other ones, Greg Lloyd, Kevin Green, all the different Steeler defensive linebackers. And even like guys like Bud Dupree now. Right. And now you go to Cincinnati with, you know, Vontaze Burfict, who's the biggest a-hole out of all of them. You know what I'm saying? These are the type of guys that you need. You need a guy like that on your team.
You need some nasty.
Yes.
You need some nasty.
You gotta have that.
The Browns absolutely need some nasty on that football team, on a defense that was giving up 30 points a game last year. You cannot just go through life giving up 30 points a game. It doesn't matter what team we're playing. If we're playing the Patriots, 30 points. If we're playing the Vikings, 30 points. If we're playing the Cardinals, 30 points. If we're playing the Bengals, 30 points. If we're playing the Texans, 30 points. It doesn't matter. Like, it's 30 points.
You play the Oilers and give up 30 points.
The Oilers was definitely scored 30 on the Browns. Right now. Right now. The Oilers, Warren Moon, would run and shoot their ass off the field right now. Okay? This is unacceptable from the Browns. There is no reason that they should be this bad on defense. And Reuben Foster would give them an attitude adjustment along with Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator. So I'm totally in lockstep with you on that. I told you months out, that Reuben Foster was my guy. Talent jumps off the screen, okay? Off the page. The only thing that scares me about him is his injury history, too, because, again, he played for Saban, and you know how Saban is running these guys into the ground, and this guy has no regard for his personal safety, which, again, is exactly what you want in a linebacker. He just hones in on the football, and he knocks guys' heads off, and Reuben Foster, I mean, listen to how excited I am on the podcast just talking about him. You bring him to Cleveland... Like, I would be excited about the Browns bringing in Myles Garrett if I knew Reuben Foster was coming with him. My dream scenario is the Browns landing Garoppolo somehow and Reuben Foster. That's my dream scenario. But if they can somehow, you know, package up whatever they need to package up, I'd give up future picks for Jimmy G and all that stuff. And they have Garrett and Foster something. Man, that would be a dream scenario. But just Garrett alone scares me. But Reuben
Garrett definitely
Foster.
He's got to have something else with that.
Yeah, man. You got to have something else with that. You need an attitude adjustment in Cleveland. You need somebody who's going to be pissed off when we're losing games.
Right.
That's
just going to accept the fact that when teams score him, he's just going to be, you know, oh, well, we'll catch him next. No, they go, not only do I want the Browns to have an attitude, but I want them to lead the league in personal fouls. I want them to, like, blow people's heads off. I mean, I honestly want them to get pissed off when teams score on them.
Right.
And it just seems like everybody's just all happy and nice. And then after the game, they slapping heads and doing hugs. No, I don't want that, man. I want them to be pissed off. I want them to be mad when these guys go up there and score on them. When they got our stadium is half full with the opposing team's fans. I want them to be upset about that. That's part of having an attitude. How you change the culture, you have to have an attitude to say, you know what, I'm sick of this crap. I'm not going to take this no more.
No.
And then somebody want to, you know, put a foot up somebody's ass and finally say, you know what, enough is enough. I'm tired of getting kicked around. You have to have that attitude going in, and you have to have moxie, attitude, desire, cojones, whatever you want to, balls, whatever you want to call it. You need to have that type of attitude in order for you to start changing the culture there.
Yes.
It's just not enough just getting good plays. You got to have attitude as well.
Yes. Reuben Foster will change the culture. I believe he's capable of doing that. So we're in agreement with Foster. I'm going to recap the mock draft, and then there's a few more things I want to touch on before we wrap up. So with the first pick, the Browns in the mock draft, you have them taking Myles Garrett. San Francisco, second pick, have them trading down, but if they don't trade down, taking Solomon Thomas. Chicago, third, taking Malik Hooker. Jacksonville, taking Leonard Fournette. Tennessee, fifth, taking Marshawn Lattimore. The Jets, potentially trading with the Browns and taking Deshaun Watson. Or regardless of who's at six, you have them taking Deshaun Watson. You think that's the right pick. The L.A. Chargers taking Jamal Adams at seven out of LSU, the safety. Derek Barnett going to the Carolina Panthers at eight. Jonathan Allen going to the Bengals at number nine. John Ross, the speedster, going to Buffalo at 10. Taco Charlton at 11 to the Saints, and Reuben Foster going to Cleveland to play for the hapless Cleveland Browns with the 12th pick. Now, a few things I want to touch on before we clock out. So under this scenario, though, you have the Browns potentially trading up to take Watson, or you have them staying put and taking Foster. So there's a few implications with each of those decisions.
Correct.
If the Browns were to trade up, what you're saying is that you believe that Deshaun Watson is worth giving up another pick. So not only is he worth whatever the Browns would have gotten for the Carson Wentz pick, but because that was the trade that the Browns made to get the second pick in the top 12. But in addition to that, the price of Carson Wentz, an additional pick, because they're probably going to have to give up next year's number one to move up to get Watson. Or if not that, a number two this year. Now, the Browns have two twos this year.
Yeah, I would give up 33. I would probably, the scenario that they will probably have to do, we'll probably have to give up, give them 12, probably 33, and then maybe like a conditional third round next year or fourth round next year or something like that for them to move up. I think that would probably satisfy them, but satisfy the Jets to move down six spots.
Okay. And so then the other thing is if they don't do that, what you're saying is that the Browns will pick Garrett 1, Foster 12, but they don't have a quarterback, Mark. So what's the move then? If they do that and they stay put and they take those two defensive players, what are they doing at quarterback? Because here's the thing. They traded for Brock Osweiler, right? And they got an extra second round pick in the process. But here's my thing. It's bad enough that you are trying to sell your fan base on picking up a garbage quarterback and that he's going to compete for the starting job. That's what they did when they traded for Brock, because from everything that we've been told by Browns management, Brock Osweiler is going to compete for that job. So it's bad enough that you're trying to convince your fans that you have a garbage quarterback coming in that you went out and got and that he's going to compete for the starting job. It's even worse when he has a horrible contract on top of it. How do you justify that if you're the Browns management? If you're Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta, how do you justify bringing in a terrible quarterback who, for all intents and purposes, has been terrible his entire career to compete for the starting job, and he's making $16 million a year? And so you're saying that we have two picks in this first round, and we're going to pass on all those guys. You passed on Carson Wentz last year. You could have traded up for Jared Goff. You didn't take him either. You picked Cody Kessler in the third round. He's whatever. He's Cody Kessler, right? So now he's coming back, and you're passing on Watson. You're passing on Trubisky, who according to most of the mocks, is going to go somewhere in the top 12, even though you didn't have him going anywhere in the top 12. And you're probably going to be passing on Deshaun Kizer as well, because I don't think he's going to be around for the second round or for the Browns pick at 33. So do you have the Browns then trading up to get their quarterback? What do they do with quarterback?
So it comes to a couple of different things for me. I do have the Browns. If that scenario happens and they take Foster and Garrett at 1 and 12, which I don't think it's going to happen. I honestly think that whoever they feel is their quarterback, whoever it is, whichever of those four quarterbacks that I mentioned is, or you can throw in Jimmy Garoppolo too. If they determine that one of those guys is the guy, they're going to trade up and get him. They're going to trade and get him because they're not going to come into the season with just Brock Osweiler at quarterback. Now, if you go under the scenario that I just mentioned, then 33 will have to come into play, and they're going to have to move back up into the first round. Because I have a feeling that their guy is Deshaun, one of their guys anyway, is Deshaun Kizer. I think Deshaun Kizer, Deshaun Watson, with an outside possibility of Pat Mahomes. I think because of all the talk that you've been hearing for the last couple of weeks about Mitch Trubisky, I that just makes me believe 110% that they're not even looking in this kid's direction.
I totally agree with that. That everything's a smokescreen this time of year. So the fact that the Browns have not been linked to Deshaun Watson at all kind of leads you to think that they probably like Deshaun Watson. And that was the one thing I was going to say about Reuben Foster, is that inside linebacker is a perceived non-need or a non-essential for the Browns right now. So I haven't heard anybody link Reuben Foster to the Browns. But but to me, that's absolutely the guy that we need at number 12. But but you haven't heard anybody say anything. So maybe that's means, you know, maybe we should take from that that the Browns actually are interested in Reuben Foster at 12.
I agree.
And
I think
the same thing with the quarterbacks.
Issues that's happened this week too, I think that's helped their cause to ensure that he's going to be there at 12. But I think now, because of all what's happened, I think he's going to be there at 12. Where I maybe about a month ago, I couldn't say definitively that he was going to be there. You were just hoping, you cross your fingers and hope he get past the Bengals at 9. But I think he's going to be there at 12.
And one other guy that whose name we have not mentioned once in this entire what's now looking like an almost 2-hour podcast is is O.J. Howard, who he was. People thought that at the beginning of this process he was going to be there at 33, and I've seen him going as high as 6 in mock drafts.
Me too.
So, what do you think of him? How, why is he not in the cards for any of these teams, in your opinion?
Well, he probably is in the cards because of the, I mean, I think this year for tight ends is probably going to be one of the best years for tight ends to come out in a long time. And Howard is the best of the bunch because he can do multiple things. He's a good inline blocker. He can stretch the defense out. You can play him wide. You can play him next to the right tackle and have him split out and go wide. You can do multiple different things with him. I think he is a game changer. I like Kellen Winslow Jr. when we drafted him before because I envisioned the same thing with him when they drafted him. I didn't fault that pick at all when the Browns drafted him at the time. And after the motorcycle accident and things, I mean, he just never was the same guy. But, you know, I think Howard has a possibility of going into a strong possibility of going in the top 10. I think for the Browns, I don't think they're at the position that they're in right now. I don't think the Browns can afford to take a guy, a tight end, with
there's too many other needs.
By trading up to 6 or taking him at 12, I don't think they're in a position to take that type of a player right now, considering all the other things that they need, particularly at the quarterback position or at the with the defensive players that are coming. I think those guys will be better served by the Browns than an O.J. Howard.
I think you're probably right. There are more crucial positions. I know Gary Barnidge had a terrible year after we gave him a contract. Like the Browns have never seen that happen before.
Right. But also on the flip side, David, they had a bunch of picks too. And like I said, this tight end class is deep. Evan Engram, you got the kid from, I can't pronounce his name, I think it's Nakoi or whatever, from Miami. You have Gerald Everett from Missouri. There's a whole bunch of tight ends that you could actually draft. Jordan Leggett, the tight end from Clemson, the Sean Watson's guy. I mean, there's plenty of guys that you could draft at the tight end position that's going to be playmaker.
I like Jake Butt. He just got hurt.
Yeah, Jake Butt from Michigan. I mean, you have a whole bunch of talent that you can draft, and I think that can fit the bill. So they're just because they don't take them in the first round, O.J. Howard, they pass on him, there's other guys that's going to be out there that they're going to be able to take and that's actually going to be productive. Because I do think that's an area that they need to upgrade. Because I think Gary Barnidge, you know, that one good year that he had was just that, a one good year.
You know, the Patriots are going to get one of those tight ends,
without question.
They're going to get Sprinkle from Arkansas, or they're going to get Engram, or they're going to get their hands on. Well, I was going to say get their hands on Jake Butt, but they're going to get their hands on Butt. They're going to do something.
Get your hands on Butt.
Bill Belichick is dying to get his hands on Butt. well, we've had a fun time this afternoon on April the 22nd, man, talking NFL draft. The draft is in, what, 5 days? Going to be something to see because it seems like we say this every year, but this is the most important year for the Browns drafting in some time. You know,
this is the most important, though. I will say this. Because these guys, I mean, there's a lot riding on this.
There
because,
is.
You know, on top of all of the stuff that we've been talking about and the fact of their history, but now you're talking a whole different thought process with this whole analytic process that's going on with them. And there's a bunch of people in this in the league that wants to see the Browns fail at this. So there's a lot that's riding on this. It's not just about, you know, from a talent standpoint and the fact that they can actually set themselves up now for the next 10 years from this draft. And if they blow it, they can really, really, really blow it. But they can blow it on so many big time levels, because from perception, from organizational decision that they made to go analytical and things of that nature, a lot of this is there. A lot of people's jobs are really riding on
it. They're doing it for
and
all the nerds.
This franchise is really riding on this draft.
They're doing it for all the nerds, Mark. This is Revenge of the Nerds. This is their time to shine. this is the nerd time to shine, man. This
is right, without question.
This is their moment, like in Revenge of the Nerds, when homie came with the javelin. You know what I'm saying? Like, in the like this is their moment to stand up and say definitively, yes, analytics belongs in football, and us nerds, without a football guy in the room, we're gonna take y'all to school in the draft. I mean, last year was their first draft, so I guess they get a mulligan because they didn't really do that well last year. At least it doesn't appear.
No, they didn't. But you think about it like this, because if you break it all the way down to the studs like they did, I mean, these guys that they drafted, those 13, 14 players, these guys are, if this team becomes good, they're going to be the bottom feeder. They're going to be the back end of this roster. They're building it from the ground up. So these guys that they selected, besides, you know, Corey Coleman and Emmanuel Ogbah, maybe Carl Nassib, you know, those guys, those first two to three guys that they drafted, they're going to be part of their cornerstones. But the rest of those guys, those are the bottom feeders. Those are just guys who are they just filling up the end of the roster with. And they gave them opportunities to try to play. Some of them played. Some of them, you know, had some time to play. Some of them didn't maximize the time that they played. So, you know, time will tell how their quote unquote draft was. I think from a standpoint, the best I could give them is a C-, because of how with Corey Coleman and his injuries, you could see that he has talent. But I mean, he's going to have to really take the next step for me to even give him anything higher than that. Emmanuel Ogbah was the saving grace of that entire draft, if you ask me.
And we'll have to leave it there, ladies and gentlemen. 2017 mock draft for the NFL, that is, because we got the NBA one too, but the NFL mock draft 2017 is in the books. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the NFL draft on Thursday from Philadelphia. Please check out the podcast and subscribe to it on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you think of Mark's projections, what each franchise should do. Please holler at your boy, Jay Hicks, and let us know what your thoughts are on the podcast. Any other topics you want us to tackle, we'd be glad to do it. I'll tackle it like Reuben Foster. You know what I'm saying? Would love to talk some more hoops in the near future as the playoffs progress. And a lot of key injuries out there, which stinks, but what are you going to do? And, you know, it's going to be fun, man. We're going to talk some hip-hop, too, next time we're on the podcast, man. But we're out of here, y'all. Hip-Hop Sports Support Podcast, preseason podcast of the year, signing off. Enjoy the NFL draft, y'all. One.
Peace out.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like him. Never make me think the wrong. Never make me no underdog, and never talk about who's gonna stop me. Well, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me.